if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 339. This is our 2025 Waste Management Phoenix Open and Commercial Bank Qatar Masters Tips Podcast. Wow. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams, the returning Paul Williams, join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss our selections for this week's PGA and DP World Tour action. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Visit our world-famous golf betting system website where we have in-depth betting previews for both the Phoenix and Qatar events. We've got Scottsdale plus Doha Golf Club strokes gained rankings, plus form stats, of course, new and old predictor models. For all of the golf action this week, all of our content is available across both events completely free of charge. We have no paywall. On X, you can follow us at Barry is at a good talk golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. Paul and I are on Blue Sky. Search for Steve Bamford and Paul Williams. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available each and every week. Right, now you guys as listeners, power this podcast. So we need your 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave our review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Now, this is our last review, listeners. So this segment of the show next week will be rather blank. So if you could write some 5-star reviews, be that wherever you are in the globe, that would be much appreciated. Right, this one is from Stephen Kelly. And he's close to you, Barry. He's in the good old city of Dublin, Republic of Ireland. Hi, guys. Really love the podcast. I wait in anticipation each Tuesday morning. The combo of weather, agronomy and stats really sits well with my bets. And I'm winning more than I'm losing. Well, Stephen, good to hear. Thanks for the time that you took to give us that 5-star review.
Cheers, Stephen.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. Good to hear that you're getting some success for your bets.
He's clearly not betting on Maverick McNealy. So well done, Stephen. Unfortunately, I'm hooked on the guy, so that's why I'm not doing so well at the moment. Right, Paul, it's great to have you back. I know that you haven't been a well guy. You've had various trips to the hospital and whatever. I don't know why I'm laughing. But how are you feeling? You said off mic that you're seeing things still moving on pieces of paper, notes and whatever.
Yes.
So, how's it going?
Could be quite an interesting podcast. Generally feeling a lot better, thanks. Still a little bit wobbly, but that's nothing unusual for a Tuesday morning. Years of practice have brought me to this point, so we'll soldier through it. Yeah, so many people have reached out, and thanks to you guys first and foremost for holding the fort last week. That is very much appreciated, and very much appreciated are the messages that I received on Facebook and X and through DM and through email. Kept my spirits up over the last week or so, and it's great to hear from you guys. And it's great, there are a number of messages saying kind of, where's the predictor models, why aren't the stats complete, that kind of stuff, where they didn't obviously know the full story. So I did reply to all of those as well, just to give a heads up. And it's good to know that so many people use the content and take some value out of it. So when it's not all there one week, then it is missed.
Yeah.
But much appreciated. Hopefully things will improve from here. It looks like it was just related to a virus that's attacked the vestibular nerve in my ear, which ultimately meant that I couldn't stand up and certainly couldn't see straight over those few days. But yeah, we're getting there now. Improving, thankfully.
I've seen you like that a few times, but it's normally sort of late into the evening.
Yeah. Well, this kicked in about 4:30 on a Friday afternoon while I was at the gym, which, I mean, yeah, a little bit later on a Friday evening, maybe, but that was not the right location, certainly a little bit early on a Friday for it to be quite so severe. But to be fair, Steve, that's the first significant disruption that you and I have had since we've been doing this since 2009.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, isn't it, when you think about it?
Well, incredible run, really. You know, you and I have soldiered through with various ailments and illnesses and come on the podcast croaky and both done podcasts and worked with COVID, that kind of stuff. But not physically being able to see the screen or keep it still was just a step too far last week. Anyway, yeah, we move on, but yeah, thanks again, guys.
We move on. I think the funniest thing was, though, that you caught that and you were doing Dry January. So Barry and I took a lot of solace from that, i.e. that we've still been drinking alcohol during January.
Yeah, I've had a number of people commenting both that going to the gym is clearly dangerous in the first place, and steering clear of the grog isn't such a good move either. Sadly, the tablets that I'm on at the moment mean it's going to be largely dry February as well. So by the time I see you at Cheltenham, Steve, I'll be chomping at the bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll have to look out for you that day, mate. a couple of snifters and you'll be back to your January state again.
I think so.
In terms of balance and focus.
Might help with the horses.
It could help with the selections. Right. A couple of bits of housekeeping, then we'll move on. I know a lot of you are listening to this on YouTube. The amount of people we're getting listening to the podcast now each and every week on YouTube is fantastic. Make sure you comment for the algorithm. Again, if you could hit 125 likes like you did last week, that would be absolutely fantastic. Sends the right signals to YouTube and all of that algorithm stuff. Also, quick mention, I'm not going to get Paul to go through it, but 2025 Golf Betting System Majors competition sponsored by Bet365. I will put a link through to the rules and everything you need to know on how to enter. Bearing in mind, we're now into February. I love it this time of year. It's the excitement's building for Augusta National and the Masters. So if you want to get your entries in, I will put a link to the rules and what you need to do in the podcast description box. Right, let's talk about last week. Rory McIlroy captured his 28th PGA Tour victory. I think it was, wasn't it?
Quite
28th, was it? 27th? It was his 27th on the PGA Tour. His second signature event win and his second win ever in California. His first win was way back when he won the World Match Play in San Francisco at Harding Park. I can remember that. Gary Woodland was in the mix, I remember. So another superb performance from Rory.
Yeah, had his little warm-up at Dubai, didn't he? Shook the rust off and got the job done.
I don't know about you. I didn't see a sea of blue on Rory McIlroy on any kind of odds-checking website. I don't think many people were on him.
Never had a great record in California. And his best, I think, on Pebble, he said, was ninth before that. Was the US Open. So
that's right.
Yeah. Wasn't screaming to go after a short price. Mm. God, he was good, though. Wow. I love when he proves us wrong. You're thinking, he won't do it this week. And then just shows up and just a different animal.
Yeah. I remember saying, Barry, Northern European conditions, McIlroy first, Shane Lowry second, Justin Rose third, Sepp Straka pretty much winning from Friday morning through to sort of Sunday hole three or four. It did have a very, and you know, you get your typical Aussie in there, Cam Davis rather than Jason Day in my case, but not much American presence at the top of the leaderboard, was there? Apart from Lucas Glover coming from off the pace, good old Lucas, and friend of the podcast, Russell Henley, who clearly led after round one and was never going to win because Russell doesn't tend to win. But yeah, it just didn't, you know, when you get a bit of wind, colder temperatures, a lot of the big Americans don't tend to hang around, and that felt like Pebble Beach last week. Shame the Ryder Cup isn't going to be played in conditions like that, really. I expect it'll be about 32 degrees Celsius in and around New York in September. What were your main takes from the tournament? I mean, I quite enjoyed it. And I thought Rory was pretty imperious, really.
Pretty special.
I think retrospectively, I mentioned this at the top of my preview this week. You look back, and I know that hindsight's a wonderful thing. 12-1 Rory was available at. Colin Morikawa was 14-1. That guy has only won once in his last 76 starts. And you had Justin Thomas at 14-1. Winless in his last 51 starts. So they were the 14-1 chances and Rory was 12-1. So yeah, actually, was that 12-1 a bad price? Was it a short price or was it actually not a bad price?
As you say, it suggests that there was very little money in relative terms for him during the course of the week. This bookie's got away with one then, particularly for a player that you know, could see winning pretty much any of the tournaments that he tees it up in. He's going to have a good year, Rory. It looks that way. You know, we were asked about standout players. A player's going to have a breakout season. Of course, for Rory, it wouldn't be classed as a breakout season should he have a fantastic year. But if he were to do something similar to what Scotty did last year and mop up half a dozen or more events over the course of the 12 months, that'd be a fantastic season for him. Get himself a bit closer to that world number one spot once again.
Yeah. He did mention his goals this year. Or career goals moving forward. I think there was a medal at the Olympics and he clearly said he still wants to win the Masters.
Yep.
So, yeah, interesting. Yeah. Especially when we've got Torrey Pines next week. So we're going to get all of these top players back at Torrey Pines. And what does Torrey Pines favour? Absolutely top-notch long driving. And Rory's driving last week at Pebble Beach was seriously back to kind of how it used to be.
Yeah.
Long and pretty accurate.
I take it they're playing all four rounds at the South next week as well.
I'd assume so. With 80 players, there's no real reason to play the North course, is there?
No. Good.
So, yeah, four rounds around Torrey Pines. Barry and I were talking about it last week, how I don't think a lot of players get on with the course. Isn't that true, Barry? So I think you're going to have to pick the kind of players that may... The ones that regularly turn out at Torrey Pines might be an advantage next week because they clearly play the tournament year in, year out because they like the test.
They love the pain.
Yeah. And actually, you look at Rory, he has played there quite often. The trouble Rory always faces is he's clearly European DP World Tour focused. He never forgets his roots and he always likes to play one or a couple of events up front on the DP World Tour in January, which means that always used to clash and does clash with Torrey Pines.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a lack of the fact he doesn't like the course. I just think it was a priority thing. Well, actually, I want to support the DP World Tour, so I'm going to play the Hero Dubai Classic, And actually, that means I won't be able to play Torrey Pines this year, rather than a dislike of the course. So, yeah, that especially in odds, it's going to be a real head-to-head next week in terms of odds with Scheffler and Rory at the top of the market. So it's going to be interesting to see how that those odds pan out. DP World Tour, I was checking the world rankings yesterday that came out nice and late, didn't they, Paul? Lori Cantor now, after his second victory in Bahrain last week, very, very close to the world's top 50. And we just mentioned about Augusta National. Don't forget, there's still a route in. If you can get into that top 50 before a couple of weeks before the Masters, you will be getting an Augusta invite. So Cantor, purely on the DP World Tour, getting close to a spot in that world's top 50. I find him quite an impressive player, but clearly he has absolutely disastrous reeks with the putter.
Yeah, and there was times gone by where it gets a Sunday and he'd just melt, but he seems to have moved on a bit from that now. And yeah, he needed some help, didn't he? He needed some help from Pablo on the 18th, three-putting that the final green there to allow it into a playoff. But you can't, you know, if you go from there and you know, prevail in the playoff, then you've shown some metal.
Barry did mention this last week. You were on Dan Brown, weren't you? Who is clearly another member of the playoff.
Yeah,
I got
to say, I didn't watch any of the golf last week. Even on Sunday, I backed Dan Brown. I backed two or three on the basis of some pre-research I'd done before I fell ill. And I couldn't do anything further from that, so I just backed the three that I'd kind of highlighted at the back end of the previous week, and one was Dan Brown. So I'd backed Dan Brown each way at 110, I think, and also on the exchange, just win only, at nearly 200. Now, on Sunday, obviously knowing the position he was in, there was no way I could lay it because he was, it was too far off. I think he was trading at 7 or something like that. So on Sunday, we were taking my eldest back to university, or my wife was driving because I can't.
I was going to say, who did the driving? That would have been interesting, going up the
M1. I can't currently drive. So
you veering across five lanes of traffic, yeah, thinking you're driving straight.
Wouldn't be ideal. So knowing I was going to be out of action, I just put what I described to Barry as a playoff insurance on Dan Brown. Well, I just laid all of the money at 2. So should he get into a playoff, then there's a pretty good chance you're going to get, you know, half your entire winnings. And that effectively would have been more or less a 100-to-1 winner. So that I was happy with that. I'll just put the lay down and just see what happens from there. And, of course, what I didn't account for was a 3-way playoff. So he never actually touched 2. I think he got as short as 2.08 or 2.03 or something like that. So none of the lay money that I put out there actually got nibbled. And so Barry messaged me afterwards and said, did you manage to lay any off? And it's like, no, not a penny.
That's a tale of woe. Seriously, woe.
Do you know, yeah, I thought the golfing gods might take some pity on me after the previous week, but yeah, no such luck. But just flicking through his round, particularly from Saturday, Dan Brown, it looks like he had a stack of opportunities on Saturday. A lot of sub-6-footers that didn't go in. Could have been out of sight. But then, you know, I know Barry was telling me that a friend of his was on Pablo, which must have been excruciating on that final hole, Barry.
I'd love to get him on to hear the pain in his voice, but because his messages to our group were not good. Mm. Said he'd already spent the money.
Oh, man. Yeah. And I dare say he was a silly short price at that point.
Yeah, when I saw Pablo pull that approach shot, though, it was just, and seeing the difficulty of that putt from that part of the green to that kind of back middle tier, I knew there was a good chance of him three-putting and Brown getting into the playoff, which was fun for a few minutes until he just washed one in the water. Anyway, a nice each-way bet. I don't think I would have arrived to be on him if it were not for you, Paul, so thank you very much.
Yeah, so it's just shame he couldn't go that extra step, but always one to watch out for in these kind of coastal affairs, Dan Brown. He's proven that time and time again over the last year or so. So, yeah. One for the notebook.
Waste Management Phoenix Open, chaps. 700,000 golf fans, although I'm not sure all of them are golf fans. I think they're alcohol fans, some of them. That's this. I mean, clearly, this is the tournament we all three of us want to go to, but whether we get there, whether we get to TPC Scottsdale one year, who knows? But Super Bowl weekend, always one of the highlights of my PGA Tour year. Love this tournament. Have had some winners in the past. Pretty much love everything about it. Love the course. Love the atmosphere. Love the close finishes. You always get a close finish in this. And the winners list isn't that bad either. Let me take you through. I'll tell you what I've said I'm going to do each and every week, but I'll do it quickly now. I'll take you through the top 10 of strokes gained tee to green last week at Pebble. There are some Phoenix starters in this. McIlroy 1, Cam Davis 2, Sepp Straka at 3, Rose was 4, Taylor Pendrith, who is playing some immense golf, 5, Scotty Scheffler, fresh off of his return. Didn't do too bad, did he? Top 10, 6th for tee to green. Unbelievable. Maverick McNealy, my latest crush, at 7. Glover, 8. Colin Morikawa, 9. Tied with Tom Kim. Some of those playing this week. The golf course we are playing on is TPC Scottsdale. Clearly, Arizona, it is desert golf. The stadium course is what we are playing. 7,261 yards, par 71, 3 par 5s. It's played at altitude. So, course type, desert, target score, mid-score, altitude, and it is a very short golf course. 7,261 yards. You can take around about 10% off of that. So we're dealing with a sub 7,000 yard par 71. The par fives here are all go-getters as well. They're five. Two of them are 558 and one is 553. And that's kind of where I'm at with this. I do like people that, when you look statistically at them, have a good go for the green confidence level to them. I don't think you need to be a long hitter. I mean, Nick Taylor last year is hardly long. Bearing in mind, he does live in Scottsdale, and during the interviews, you know, he said, "Oh, I play here 5-6 times a year. I often nip over here and play 6 holes." And you know, been nice to have known that beforehand or worked it out. But I do think that you've got to be of an aggressive mindset. Players that continually lay up here aren't going to win. I think you need to be hitting some of these greens in two on the fives. You've also, of course, got the 17th, that famous drivable par four, although if it is drivable, good luck. You've got to get that ball to stop on the green surface or just behind it. Otherwise, you're dying a wet death. Now, I do want to point this out, and this has changed since my original preview come out. These greens here are very, very complex. They are complex year in, year out. And what I mean by that is they have a Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass base. Sorry, I'm getting into my agronomy. I can feel the tingles at the end of my fingers. I'm getting excited. They are always overseeded because of the time of year they play here, because clearly it's in, you know, they're prepping this course in January and early February. Always overseeded. Now, the last couple of years, they've only been overseeded with Poa Trivialis. But the greenkeeper's sheet came out yesterday after my preview was released, Monday lunchtime in the UK. And we've reverted back, chaps, to Poa Trivialis and bent grass overseed. So I will be capturing these slightly differently in terms of the predictor model. We've got a mix of Poa Trivialis and bent grass overseed this year. I think the last 2 years they've been just Poa Trivialis, and then prior to that, you always used to get that bent grass mix in there. Amazingly enough, they were always bent grass mix the 2 years that Hideki Matsuyama won here. And we know that Hideki ain't got a bad record on bent grass as a rule. So that might be just something. It's a curveball. It's coming late, but that might be something to look at. If you can find players that are comfortable, far more comfortable on bent grass greens than they are on Bermuda, that could be something to investigate this week. Other thing to note here, I have already read this out to the guys pre-pod, but I'll read it out to you guys. Again, this is from the tournament fact sheet from the superintendent. Phoenix has had the second longest dry streak in recorded history. From August the 24th to my birthday, the 29th of January, there has been no rain. And for those desperately looking at their iPhone and going through the calendar, that's 159 days without precipitation. So, and we've seen this many, many years here, I get the feeling that we're going to get a nice, solid, firm golf course. Plenty of roll on the fairways. Not a huge amount of rough. But also, especially I'm talking kind of, well, it can happen from the start here, but I think we're going to see release in greens, Barry. Didn't see that last
year. I'm ready.
Yeah, you're ready, yeah. So I don't, and this doesn't tend to be a, this doesn't tend to be a Shriners Open or a American Express total and utter birdie fest. I get the feeling a good, I don't think straight 67s is a bad score this week. I'd be surprised if straight 67s doesn't get you an each way place. Mm. No wind in the forecast weather-wise, warmer than the last couple of years. I think weather-wise, we're looking at very nice conditions. Just a slight breeze, maybe 10, 12 miles an hour. Temperatures are significantly up from last year. 20 to 23 degrees Celsius, 68 to 73 Fahrenheit. And it's not a bad field, is it? It's not a bad field. It's considering this isn't a signature level event. I think the field is decent enough. Previous winners here, Nick Taylor's defending 21 under. They won't get to 21 under. There was a lot of moisture around and soft conditions, rain during the event. 21 under isn't going to be the target score this year. Scotty Scheffler won at 19 under in 2023. Scotty Scheffler won at 16 under in 2022. Not sure that score is going to be too far wide of the mark. Brooks Koepka, 19 under. Webb Simpson, 17 under. Ricky Fowler, woohoo, 17 under in 2019. Gary Woodland, woohoo, 18 under in 2018. Woodland and Fowler, friends of the podcast. And as I said earlier, Hideki Matsuyama's had Matsuyama has had two wins here, as has Brooks Koepka in the past. Just want to point out before I go into my selections, and this is something I want to just highlight. I don't think this is a bad thing. Right, looking at the top of the leaderboard this week, Scheffler, Thomas, Matsuyama, Sungjae Im, Sam Burns, Tom Kim. They're the six shortest priced players. Right. Scotty Scheffler has won 13 events in his last 62. That's right, 13 in his last 62. Justin Thomas, Justin Thomas, no wins in his last 51. Hideki Matsuyama, three wins in his last 21. Sungjae Im, no wins in his last 84. Sam Burns, no wins in his last 39. Tom Kim, no wins in his last 30. That's the top six in the bag this week. Some context there. I mean, Sungjae Im, no wins in 84 PGA Tour starts. And you're backing him at 22 to 1.
Yeah, it's always short, isn't it?
Any thoughts before we go on to our selections, chaps?
No, well, good. I think you've done a sterling job there, Stephen.
Oh, thank you. Barry?
Ready to go. I like that they let the course kind of get firm and fast, because the ball rolling around and, you know, releasing on the greens is an excitement factor for the crowd too, rather than just watching darts land beside pins. So they kind of embrace it, which is great.
Yeah, I think it's the kind of course that you cannot physically overpower. You cannot physically overpower it when it's playing at what they want it to play at in terms of its firmness. You can't shortside yourself. There's water everywhere. Six of the holes here have water in play. I mean, I'm amazed that Tony Finau got into a playoff here one year with Webb Simpson with the amount of water on this golf course. It doesn't feel Tony Finau-ish where you just rip with the driver. The fairways are kind of, they're okay, you know, 27 to 30 yards at landing areas plus 300, so they're kind of tour average. But I think you've got to be quite tactical around here. And just looking at that strokes gained breakdown that we would run through every week on the PGA Tour, 62% over the last 4 years of winners, 62% of strokes gained have been tee to green, and 38% with the putter. Now, last week at Pebble Beach, that was a 56-44 split. So we've got 6% less strokes gained being gained on the greens this week. Not as low as we had at the Sony Open back in week two on the season, which was a 72-28. I think, though, you do need to be ideally gaining around about 0.8 to a stroke with the putter on these greens. I don't think team absolute no putt negative strokes gained putting is going to get you close to winning. In terms of numbers, it's 2.29 strokes tee to green per round and 1.41 strokes with the putter on average over the last 4 years. Right. Clearly, we have Scottie Scheffler here at 3-2-1. What do you do? I'm seeing him as short as 5-2 with Ladbrokes and Coral. Now, I did mention he's won 13 times in his last 62 tournaments. Just to scare you even more, and we do know this as a podcast, I know that we've got lots of new listeners here. If you scan right down to the bottom of my preview before my tips, I always break down winners on particular green surfaces. Scottie Scheffler has won 9 times on Bermuda grass-based greens. The bent grass won't scare him because he's not so bad at the Masters, is he? He does okay then. You got Scheffler with 9, Justin Thomas with 6, Jordan Spieth with 5. It's just his kind of golf course. But I can't be back. I remember last year I was in non-signature events. I backed him a couple of times and he finished second in both. So it's one that he'll be there. You just know he's going to be there. It's whether is he going to land at 133-1. I can't do it this week. Not with a strong field and on a. I don't know. It just didn't feel right to me. My top bet in terms of price, and I know he hasn't won in his last 30, but actually that's not that bad. He also has 3 wins on the PGA Tour in a very short career. I've gone for Tom Kim. We've mentioned already in 2025, I don't think Tom... You know when we've done our fantasy Bet365 major competition picks, I said I don't think Tom Kim's going to be a bad bet moving forward for the Open Championship.
Yeah.
And yet again, on a short coastal golf course in conditions I don't think were ideal for him when it's gusting 26, 28, he was in the top 10. I don't think... I still think on a... On a mid score Open Championship year on a short course, I think Tom Kim isn't a bad bet at the majors moving forward. So I managed to scrabble 35-1 yesterday, 8 places each way on Tom Kim to win this. 2 of his 3 PGA Tour victories in the desert in Las Vegas at TPC Summerlin. So thin air, altitude, golf, not a problem. I just think he's trending for that win. And you can tell with Tom, if he's comfortable with the driver and his iron game is strong, he's going to ping at some point. So 30 tournaments on the PGA Tour without a win, I think he's trending towards one. So I've gone 2 points each way, 35-1 with Betfred, 8 places each way on Tom Kim. What I found interesting, he played here last year off of incoming form of 45, miscut, 31. He finished T5 if you just looked at his last 54 hole scoring. Shot 13 under. He ultimately finished 17th because he had not a great first round. So T5, it just seemed to me that he was got his head around the course, learnt what he needed to do, was getting used to the atmosphere and the sheer raucousness. I think he's rounding into something. So yeah, 35-1. I'm on Tom King, 2 points each way. Right, you boys, where are you chiming in at?
I'm worried for your bet, Steve. Are you afraid he's going to get chirped a lot this week, and you know he's going to get asked about being slow? Because he was quite a focal feature of the slow play last week. There was some videos going around online. Do you think that's going to put him off? He's going to try speed up his tempo just his shot timings. You didn't see it, did you? No.
He'll be fine. He'll be right.
Be interesting to see. Yeah, just I don't know. Like it's that this slow play thing has come into a crescendo. It seemed to get even worse on the weekend there, and so yeah, they're starting to look for a witch to burn by the looks of it.
Yeah, and when it's gusting 30 miles an hour off the sea, you're going to get delays, aren't you? Because you know, just as you're prepping for your shot, all up, this huge blast of air, sensible people walk away from the shot. We're not seeing any of that this week. It's kind of desert, sort of dome type golf. So hopefully that speeds things up a little bit. But yeah, don't know. I do agree with you. This shot length kind of situation with players like Cantlay, it's becoming a bigger and bigger issue, isn't it? Well, it is on Twitter. Whether it is actually in golf circles of the guys that are making millions and all of the coaches and hangers-on that make hundreds of thousands off of those millions, whether they talk about it, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, whether it impacts someone like a Tom Kim until he gets put on the clock, I'm not sure. If people are in his ear, maybe thinks about it, but does it materially change your approach to how you play the game? And as Steve said, in tougher conditions, all of the players will take time to make sure that they're playing the right shot, particularly if it's an important part of the tournament. And in terms of Tom Kim, Steve, I'm on Kim. I think that he is the sort of player who could stand up to Scotty and take him on this week. I'm a little concerned that Scotty could just go and mop this up. And if he does, then everyone's just playing for place money this week. But yeah, second at the Genesis, wasn't he? He lost in a playoff to Benny Ann back in the last year, and then decent enough at Pebble Beach. And as you say, really slow start last year, didn't he? He was just staring that miscut in the face and then managed to scythe his way through the field. So perhaps getting his head around it.
He was in that playoff last year with Scheffler at River Highlands, wasn't he?
That's
the
right,
Travellers,
yeah.
when those guys were running around throwing throwing orange powder all over the green.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder if they're going to keep doing that now that Trump's in power. Are we still going to see protestations like that from people?
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this course is pretty perfect for Tom Kim.
Yeah,
actually.
I thought the opening 35s with the extended places, he's been nibbled in a bit since. He's been a popular boy overnight, Tom Kim. But yeah, there's still 33s out there. I think that's decent enough.
Where's your first bet, Barry? Where are you placing it?
I think I kind of expect Scheffler to be there to ruin the day. So I'm kind of going for a couple of mid, and then one long one. I have two. Well, sorry, one I definitely want to cut mid high in the 80s, and then one very long one.
What's your first price point? Just give me that.
80.
80. That's your first price point. 80 to 1.
Yeah.
Right, Maverick McNeely next up for me. Do I have to actually say anything? I like him. I've got a crush on him. Betfred hung 55 to 1 on him, at 8 places each way in their extended market. 6th here last year. He breaks my heart every time. He'll start well and then disappear mid-round and play well in the final round. He won't start well. He'll throw the tournament away on Thursday and then he plays the last 54 holes brilliantly. But we've been doing this a long time and sometimes you just can't get off players. And statistically, he's hitting the ball very, very close on his approaches. He plays golf better on shorter golf courses. You actually look at the predictor model variables and he's a decent firm golf course player, which was one thing that stood out to me. He's far better on firmer golf courses, and this is rare. He's better in firmer conditions than he is in softer conditions, Maverick McNeely. So I think the course conditions will suit him. And there is something here about when you just look at the list of winners, and this is non-debutants. We have had a couple of debutants win here, Kyle Stanley and Brooks Koepka. I mean, the Koepka guy, I don't know if you've heard of him, he weren't a bad player. If you played here before, all winners recently have had a top 10 before they take this out. So McNeely, I took that at 55 to 1 with Betfred 8 places each way. Have you got another one before Barry's 80 to 1, Paul?
No, I've only got one other one and he's okay. 200 to 1.
I'll throw Akshay Bhatia into the mix as well. A point each way at 55 to 1. I took him with Bet365 via their 8 places each way market. Just the sort for me. Ended last year really well. 2nd in Japan, 4th in the Bahamas, 3rd in Florida. He then flew over to Dubai for the Dubai Desert Classic. Did a lot of the social media with the top players. He was 37th in Dubai. Last week, solid 22nd. Yeah, I don't know. He's just, again, another... I like his mix this week. Great on his approaches and he's putting really well at the moment. And he won last year on similar type greens that they play at the Valero Texas Open, TPC San Antonio. Two-time winner on the PGA Tour. His first win was the 2023 Barracuda Championship, which they play at Old Greenwood up in the Californian desert, thin air type conditions, mountainous area there. Yeah, I like Bhatia. Within my strokes gains trackers, he's top 25 tee to green, top 15 approach. And like I said, top 5 for putting over the last 8 tournaments. So he's in good shape. Right. Barry, give us your first selection, please.
So he was around 80. I haven't put the bet on yet, but just trying to keep it fairly straightforward, looking at the combi stats sheet and his, you know, nice lineup, 3rd and then 13th are his last two events. He finished 8th here last year. So I'm just hoping he just rides that nice form with the good memories of last year and converts that into... maybe an each-way place. Don't know if he's ready for the win, but happy to be proven wrong. Andrew Novak.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going well, isn't he? He was right in the heat of the battle here last year, if I remember. He was up there with Taylor and Scheffler and the guys that was involved at the top. Just had a quiet Sunday. Thing is with Novak, you keep looking at him. You do see him a lot on Sundays, don't you, recently? And at some point, it's going to...
One or two putts will drop. Yeah,
yeah,
maybe. The name has been popping around. You know, just been featuring without being shown on TV. So it's just sitting there in the back of your mind and just kind of just jumped off the sheet there looking at it. So that's my kind of starting point. I have a look at recent form and course form. So give him a whirl. There was one I was looking at before that. I wanted to get your thoughts on him. Rasmus. Won some good events, like with, you know, the Irish Open last year, Omega European Masters, kind of those more notable standout events on, you know, of the regular ones on tour. Mm. This kind of feels analogous in a PGA Tour sense. So yeah. I just wanted to see and get a feeling, is he any use in the dome golf, dry, bouncy conditions?
Bit of altitude at, a lot of altitude at Crans or Sierra as well. Not quite so much at Scottsdale, but has shown an aptitude to do it.
It's not as if he's got inexperience in desert golf, is it?
No.
Clearly, a lot in the DP. And we have seen the likes of Brendan Grace and players like that that have done well here, that have got a background of European Tour, Euro spots in the desert. I did think that in a sea of short prices, Højgaard's price is quite value packed, I thought. Yeah, just worst bets, I think.
50-1 for 8 places was.
It's like anything else, isn't it? Do we think he's got the? I mean, he's inexperienced on the PGA Tour, as in barely any. Mm. Is he going to be able to cope with the crowd? What you got to ask yourself.
Yeah, or will he thrive in it?
Or will he thrive? I don't know. I mean, Paul watches a lot more DP World Tour golf, but then I don't recall many DP World Tour events where there's 700,000 turning up over 4 days.
No, it's pretty unique, really.
Saying with the crowd quickly, Paul, he did very well last year in the Irish Open when playing in Northern Ireland and Rory was there in the hunt, so the whole crowd was rooting for Rory.
Yeah. Yeah, just zoned out. I don't think you know until you see a player in that situation how they react to it. It's like Ryder Cup, isn't it? You know, these players, when it's raucous, when it's noisy, do they respond to it? Do they embrace it? Do they enjoy it? Or do they kind of shrivel away? It doesn't feel like the kind of player who would shrivel away to me. It feels like one who would enjoy it. But, yeah. It's a choice thing, isn't it? Are there better options out there? More experienced options at 50? Well, certainly more experienced options in terms of the course. But the boy's packed with talent. You know, some of these boys who are coming over or have come over to the PGA Tour are going to continue to perform and potentially mop up the odd tournament. I'd just be wary with Scheffler at the top. I just have this nagging feeling he just goes and wins and we're all sitting there scrabbling around for an each way place.
That's probably the thing. I think that's why I landed at the higher odds this week.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Just, you know, you can't, it feels like you're fighting against Scheffler. Like his first tournament back after surgery, Kyle Porter had a great tweet. It's like it's his tied third worst result in, I don't know, 17 years or something, in ninth position last week, so...
I know. He was in the top 6 for Tee to Green. It's just craziness, isn't it?
It's a machine. How he's not there, like lurking on Sunday or heavily, you know, it's unfathomable. I can't even talk. I think he's there. So, but that should we put a saver on him at 3-1? Maybe not. When you're talking about how many wins did you say, Steve, out of his last 60?
13, I think. So yeah, it's kind
only
of
13.
So that doesn't make sense. Yeah. So then 3-1 is not an auto blind bet.
No.
But his record here says maybe you should. I don't know.
Don't forget though, we saw Scottie Scheffler, and I know I was on board. You know, the kiss of death was on him. We saw him get beat by Stefan Jaeger last year. And he also got beat by, was that Akshay Bhatia who beat him in Houston the week before? Or no, it wasn't Valero, was it? There was another tournament that he got beaten in a head-to-head. Was it Davis Riley at Colonial?
It's not as if he's,
and these are non-signature level events. It's not as if he's unbeatable. But you just know he's going to be there or thereabouts on the Sunday in the final group or the second final group, putting pressure on whoever's there.
Yeah, he's just generally he's got to putt poorly and someone else has got to have a pretty fantastic week.
Davis Riley beat him. He was 350-1 at Colonial last year in a head-to-head.
Yeah.
And the other one was Stefan Jaeger at the Houston Open. He won at 50-1. I was on Scheffler at 3-1.
It's your fault, Steph. There you go.
Kiss of death, mate. Mm. Can I take you through my Charlie Hoffman bet, the Desert Rat of the week?
Go on.
I always remember Kevin Nye used to be Desert Rat, didn't he? It's now Charlie Hoffman. He's just, I don't know, he's crazy. And he's won $2.3 million here. He's won $4.3 million at the Valero Texas Open. As I said, you know, there's a lot of. That's a desert. I know it's in Texas, but that's a deserty, firm kind of golf course with similar greens. I make it. He's earned over $5.4 million in the desert over his career, Charlie Hoffman. That's without the 4.2 down in Texas at the Valero Texas. These are just his conditions. He was in the hunt last year with Novak. He was in the hunt with Taylor, Scheffler. Could miss the cut, but I'll say one thing about him. These are his ranks across my eight tournament trackers. First for off the tee, in the top 25 for approach, third for tee to green, and in the top 20 for current form. He's drifted. You can get 100-1 on him, eight places. But I didn't think that was a bad bet, so I'm on Hoffman at 90-1 with Bet365, eight places each way. There's 100-1, eight places out there available right now as we record the pod. My last one's 110, so do you want me to run through it or do you guys want to chipe him?
Yeah, do that, and then we'll go through mine and Barry's bombs, shall we?
Nick Dunlap. What, you're saying Nick Dunlap wouldn't be a bomb at 110-1?
I don't know. Good price.
Yeah, 110-1. We were on him last year, if you remember, Barracuda. He won the 2023 US Amateur at Cherry Hills, which is where they played the BMW last year. That's at altitude, Denver, Colorado. And his first PGA Tour victory as an amateur last year, the first amateur to win a PGA Tour event since 1991, Phil Mickelson, was at the American Express, which again they play in the desert of California, PGA West. That golf course features Bermuda, overseeded with Poa Trivialist Green. So fairly similar to this week. So yeah, I've taken Nick Dunlap. He just keeps popping up on leaderboard. He's not as prominent as Andrew Novak, that's for sure. But I know that he's top 10 at the Sony, and he was kind of top 18 after two rounds last week at Pebble, and then the wind started howling, and Nick isn't the straightest, and he started to go backwards. But Nick Dunlap, I reckon, in calm conditions in desert settings isn't a bad look. So Dunlap for me, Hoffman the Desert Rat, Akshay Bhatia, Maverick McNealy, I can't help myself, sorry, Tom Kim. Those are my five. Right, over to you two.
Right, the other one I've got, and then I'll let you take the floor, Barry. The other one I've got is KH Lee, back to 200-1. Never the most consistent is KH Lee. Five straight missed cuts, and then finished ninth at the Farmers on his last start. And if you look at his round, 67-76, 68-75. So two really good, two pretty bad. But that's typical KH Lee, isn't it? That's what you get with him. He can do absolutely nothing. He could bomb out. He could be the first round leader here. He could contend. He could win. 200-1. I'm quite happy to pay out or pay to find out at least. But second year in 2021, he was the first round leader here the year after in 2022 before fading away. So he has some course competence and coming off a little bit of form. So thought 200-1 was worth taking a chance on. But yeah, just Lee and Tom Kim for me. What about you, Barry?
Do you know what? I was looking for a long shot. KH Lee was saying hi a little bit. but one caught my attention just a little bit more. It was Hayden Springer.
Mm. Oh, yes.
Just looking for, you know, recent stuff, good approach, good tee to green, half decent show and putting. And looking at your strokes gained rankings, he is tied third for strokes gained approach. Mm. He's tied 11th for tee to green and 14th in putting, which is kind of a nice combo when you look at the requirements for this tournament. Now, in general, the approach play is not his strongest suit, but, you know, good sixth there 2 weeks ago on a tee to green test in Torrey. So I'm looking just around at the moment. I think I can find him at 250-1, 8 places.
Mm.
See, can I get that on? Which would be nice. Even still, he's 200-1, 8 places in a couple of other spots. If I can't get it on that one site, and I might just do a little top up on Betfair just to cover that 50-point difference. You know how you can do that sometimes to when you get a lower price. Sometimes you just take the difference on, you know, add a little tip on Betfair just to get a bit extra. So yeah,
ways and means.
I remember getting third with him in Puerto Rico last year. He's a talented lad. He's had a third at Puerto Rico, seventh at the John Deere Classic, eighth at the Sanderson Farms, and then that sixth from his first outing because he's got quite low membership. He was sixth at Torrey Pines last time out. But yeah, eye-catching statistics, Hayden Springer. Right, that's us for the Waste Management Phoenix Open. We now travel across the globe back to the Middle East. The Commercial Bank Qatar Masters. Over to you, Paul. This is quite a long event. Plenty of history on the DP World Tour, isn't it, this one?
Yeah, it goes back all the way to... Ask me the question now. 1998, I think it was. The course opened in 96 and they played it here first in 1998. Worth noting, actually, with the stats this week, that they did move to a different venue in 2020 and 2021. So that's all marked on the stats sheets. So if you're flicking through all of the history, then do take note of that. But yeah, the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters, the last leg in our early season Middle East swing, and then the tour takes a week off next week. It's they seem to be building these kind of weeks where they go from one area of the world to another and then have a little break in the middle, which I guess
they're doing some swings.
Yeah, and then they take a week and then they start the next swing. So, blank week next week. But yeah, it does have a level of sense. 144-man field headlined by last week's winner, Laurie Canter, at around 12-1. Johannes Veerman, 25, same price, Jordan Smith. Jorge Campillo, 28, Ewan Ferguson, 33, same price, Keita Nakajima. Rasmus Nygaard, Peterson, 35s, 40-1 bar, so for all intents and purposes, a bog standard DP World Tour field 2025 style with all of the big names that we had last year, all of course disappeared over to the States, either sitting there playing this week or sitting in the alternates list hoping to get a start over in Phoenix. Ball Sports, 10 places each way on this event, actually. If you that's their standard offer this week. So if you want some extra places, have a look at the Ball's prices. Bet365, Betfred, both of them got 8 place each way options. Decent prices, terms, combination from those two. In fact, I got all four of my selections away with a combination of 365 and Betfred this week on their 8 place markets. The course, Doha Golf Club in Qatar. It's a Peter Harradine design, as I said, opened in 1996 in a typical exposed desert style affair. It did move to Education City, as I mentioned. That was in 20 and 2021. Similar kind of agronomy there and, you know, in the same part of the world. So you can give it a cursory look if you're checking through the stats. But of course, it was a different course for those 2 years, but the last three renewals all been played back here at Doha. Conventional par 72, And both of the nines start and end with a par five. Quite quirky in that respect. You've got the drivable par four for 16th as well. And while we moved over to Education City, they relayed all of the greens here with paspalum grass. So it seems to be quite a popular strain now, moving ever more, becoming ever more common, particularly over in the Middle East when we move over there for those events. So paspalum greens, winning scores here vary, and it depends based on the wind. We can see single digit winning scores here under par. We can see 20 under or deeper if it's soft and calm. It's really quite exposed, so when the wind does blow, it can make it really quite tough. Does look like there's going to be a bit of breeze in the forecast as well this week. 15 to 20 mile an hour on Thursday, gusting 25 plus potentially. So Thursday could be quite tricky. A little lighter on Friday, and then there's a steady 15 mile an hour over the weekend, gusting 20. So I suspect if I was to put a number on it this week, 14, 15 under par, something like that, I think is probably where we need to be heading towards in terms of a winning score. But we shall see. If it gets significantly more windy than that, perhaps it'll be a little bit higher and towards the single digits. Sunny conditions, temperatures in low 20s centigrade. That's the low 70s Fahrenheit. So other than the breeze, nothing much to talk about. In terms of winners, the favourites don't tend to have it all their own way here. If we look at the events just from Doha going back to 2018, Eddie Pepperell won that year 70-1. Justin Harding the year after 55-1. A couple of years break, and then Ewan Ferguson was 150-1 in 2022. Sammy Valimaki 80-1, and then Rikuyu Hoshino last year 45-1, who had been flashing a little bit of form. And then came here and won. But yeah, it's that kind of happy mid-price, happy hunting ground for us punters. So one of these events where you can really start to get your teeth into, I think. Lots of stats over the years, as you alluded to, Steve. There's a wealth of data here. So I've listed the last decade or so in terms of traditional stats on my preview. The number or the metric that comes through most regularly is scrambling. Generally, you need to be keeping your card pretty clean in here, regardless of the conditions. So I think players who can avoid bogeys, scramble well, are a good starting point in terms of old-style stats. Par threes are tough here, so if you've got a player who plays well in the par threes, that's not such a bad starting point either. Of course, you've got the four par fives, so you do need to be able to score well on those, and a little bit of aggression, a little bit of power off the tee has helped here in the past. It's not the be-all and end-all. Some of the players who have won here have been, you know, middling at best, but I think you need to be able to attack the fives as and when it's appropriate to do so. In terms of strokes gained data, we have got last four events with strokes gained available. The last two winners both ranked third for strokes gained approach. All four of the winners were top 18 for strokes gained tee to green. So if you're using those metrics as your starting point, then approach and tee to green look pretty good. In terms of incoming form, all of the winners here at Doha back to 2010 had a top 10 or better in one of their last seven starts. In fact, if you look at the three events since we returned here in 2022, each of the winners are the top 10 in their last four starts. So some fairly immediate incoming form, even if that stretches back to right at the back end of 2020 form, isn't a bad shout. Top 10 just popping up in someone's recent enough history is probably a good sign, I think. Course form, though, pretty mixed. Ferguson, in 2022, he'd missed the cut on his only other start here. Valimaki had a best of 38th, and Hoshino had finished 36th on debut before winning here last year. So I wouldn't get overly hung up with course form. Current form probably a little bit more pertinent this week. We also see a lot of good links players perform well here over the years. Brandon Grace won it a couple of times and is an atypical good Lynx player. So, I mean, that's pretty worthy a note. And when the wind blows here, it can be quite a Lynxy test. I tend to put the Qatar Masters down as one of my research events when I'm looking at the kind of the later season Lynx courses and Lynx events, because it often does play like that, particularly if there's a bit of breeze, which there is this week. So look for good Lynx players, Middle East form, Paspalum form as well, with these new greens. The greens are settled down now, so they're not overly bouncy or firm in that respect, but some players just don't get on with Paspalum, some players love it. So if you can pick the players who have performed well on that kind of surface in the past, then that may help you as well. Now, I've got four picks here. I know we're well over an hour already, so I'll just rattle through them and then I'll bring you guys in. I was toying with Jordan Smith. I sat and I spent a long time thinking whether to back Jordan Smith at around 25-1 this week. He was third for greens in regulation last week. He was ninth for strokes gained putting, which is a sparky week for Jordan Smith with the putter. I got to the point where it was either that and then maybe one or two others or leave him alone. And my overriding thought with Jordan Smith is he probably will be there or thereabouts. He'll probably finish tied 23rd or something like that and just disappoint. And that really isn't good enough when he's second or third favourite. If he goes and wins, I don't think I'm going to beat myself up about it, because, what, 22-1, a little bit of 25s out there. Yeah, just not enough juice for me. I've started my team with Daniel Hillier. Now, I backed him 40-1 with eight places. You can get up to 45s or a little bit of 50s out there if you take fewer places, but I wanted all of the places this week. 40-1 for Hillier. He kept Till Hatton honest back in Dubai at the start of the season or last month, and finished just one shot off the team Europe Ryder Cup player in the end. Now, that was Rolex Series level, clearly a lot higher than this week's standard. Laurie Kanter finished third, so he was behind Daniel Hillier, and of course that form's been franked properly last week by Kanter's win. So I think that form is well worth looking at. Second for strokes gained off the tee last week, that particular week. Sixth for tee to green, eighth for strokes gained putting, 11th for strokes gained approach. His metrics were all really, really good over there at the Emirates. Now, he missed the cut the following week at Ras El Khaimah, but I kind of expect that with these DP World Tour players. Stringing two big weeks together doesn't happen that regularly. I think if you're going to be able to do that, then you're probably playing over on the PGA Tour. So a miscut the following week doesn't surprise. 24th last week, though. He closed with a 65. That opened and closed with a bogey as well. He could have shot 63 or better, and should have some real momentum coming into this. 16th here on debut. He led the field for strokes going off the tee. He was fourth for strokes going tee to green. I think if he putts well this week, Daniel Hillier in this field could go very, very close to securing that second DP World Tour title. So here's my top pick. I've also backed Scott Jamieson 50-1, again with eight places. I backed Scott here last year, and he looked like he was just going to be an also-ran at the halfway point. He shot rounds of 72, 71, sitting in the mid-40s in terms of his position on the leaderboard. Then caught fire over the weekend. He shot 68, 65, finished third. That was his second consecutive third place finish here at Doha. So has shown some good form here. Has shown some good form in the Middle East over the years too. More recently, 8th Ras El Khaimah, 18th last week in Bahrain. And like Hillier, he closed with around a 65 last week in Bahrain. So coming in with a bit of momentum, Scott Jamieson. Two longer prices. Marcus Armitage, the bullet, 90-1. I was surprised at the price actually, because he played so well at the Ras El Khaimah the week before last. He opened with a 63 that week. He kept Alejandro Del Rey honest coming down the stretch. Closed with a bogey free 68, but couldn't quite get close enough to Del Rey in the end, but decent enough effort. I think this suits better, because what was Del Rey? I think he was 22 under, something like that in the end. I think Armitage, I think the Bullet prefers it when it's a little tougher. And I think with a bit of wind round here, the winning score is going to be down or up, depending which way you look at it. It's going to be that kind of low to mid-teens level. And I think that suits him much, much better. Fifth here in 2022, patchy record generally, but it's shown that he can perform here. So I thought the Bullet was worth backing at 90-1. And the final one, Marcel CM, I've backed. I got him yesterday 170-1 with eight places. There's 175 out there right now with fewer each way places, but plenty of good, strong three figure, triple digit each way options on CM this week with extended places. So, depending how you want to play it, but yeah, he was one of those players that just kept popping up on my analysis. And I know you must be the same, Steve. A player just keeps banging you over the head when you're doing you're running through your data. Eventually, it just makes you think, well, I've just got to back him. I've just got to get him on my team. So that's exactly what I've done. I've embraced the German this week. For me, it feels a bit like Pablo Larrazabal last week. You've got a guy here who's a multiple winner at this level, proven at this level. Six times he's won it on this tour. Going all the way back to 2004, but seems to have had a new lease of life in recent times. He won the Indian Open in 2023, won the Italian Open last year. And five of his six wins have all come between that kind of key point for this. Between 8 and 17 under has been his kind of sweet spot in terms of his winning score. And I think that's pretty ideal for this week. Fourth into Sunday here back in 2004. 12th overall back in 2012. Comfortable on Paspalham greens as well. He lives over in Mauritius now, so he gets plenty of practice on the Paspalham greens over there on the coast. Coming into this off form of 58, miscut 34, and that explains the price. But he was 10th after day one last week, and I think he's far better. He's got a far better chance than the price suggests this week, particularly in the level of field. So happy to go with CM. Marcus Armitage, Scott Jameson and Daniel Hillier are my four. And I'm rather hoping that Jordan Smith doesn't win. Barry, what about you? You got any selections this week?
I'm going to join you on Armitage. Yeah. Loved what he was saying there a couple of weeks ago. And like you said, it's easy to slip into a miscut very soon after a heavy contention week. So pleasant price this week. So that's it for now. I may add one more. The Jameson one is interesting. Just wonder if he can do 3 weeks in a row, having had two decent weeks in a row now.
Again, you know, going back to your point from Phoenix about that combination of current form and course form, just kind of eyeballing it is one that stands out. And yeah, don't know. There was no reason for me to leave him out. I backed him last year, did the business, got decent each way last year, and could do the same again this week.
Yeah, I think with the Brown pick last week, maybe your radar is a lot hotter. So I think I'd do wise to stick close to your picks this week.
Well, I don't know. We'll see about that, Barry. What about you, Steve?
Love players coming back to DP World Tour level from PGA Tour. Antoine Rosner got 28-1, 10 places each way with Boyles yesterday. Mm. His record over here in Qatar is very good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sixth hit on this golf course last year.
Yeah.
That win in 2021, I take it as on the different course, yeah?
Yeah, yes. 2020 and 2021 were the ones played at Education City. But they were on Paspalham from memory, and I think there's enough links with the courses to not disregard it completely.
I've also had a bet in Live. They're playing in Riyadh. He got me a full each way place last week. Must stay on board. David Puig, 25-1 with bet 3, 6, 5, 8 places each way. That's Liv Riyadh, David Puig. Do you know what happens? Forget all about him and then, oh Christ, he's top of the leaderboard. He's six clear going into Sunday. You're like, oh God.
Didn't fancy Tom McKibben on his debut over there, Steve.
I don't get Tom McKibben's decision apart from dollars, but there you go. If that's Liv's top signing this year, that's the state of golf at the moment. What do you think about that, Barry? McKibben going to Liv when he's just got a PGA Tour card and broken the world's top 50?
I think we don't have all, or even close to all, the information he has available to him, or know enough about what's going on in his life to make him go for that decision. It seems a bit crazy to us, but I'm sure he's got plenty of reasons he did it. So
tempting, isn't it? At that age, money being dangled in front of you.
Yeah, that money just sets you up. That's it. You're done. You're set for life. So it's a big consideration.
Mm.
Really is. You know, it's easy to say from a position of outside that, but yeah, when it's on the table, you can kind of understand the signature getting put down. Anyway, look, let's see what happens. There's been, you know, a few more rumbles about things coming together. Rory saying a couple of things last week, so.
Yeah,
and he'll get to still play DP World Tour level. I mean, we've seen a lot of Livsters playing DP World Tour, so it's not as if he's not going to be playing tournaments that are not world golf ranking rated. So, yeah, I can kind of see it potentially, but yeah, there we go. Right, like next week, Genesis Invitational, not at Riviera, at Torrey Pines. I hope your bets go well, gentlemen.
Best of luck, boys.
You too, boys.
Best of luck to listeners. Hope your bets go well, your DraftKings team and all that shillart, you know, all that stuff. Don't forget, if you're listening on YouTube, please press the like button and subscribe to the channel. We'll be back next week. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved. With all the stats and the tips and so much more, 'cause it's the golf betting system, the golf betting system.